Welcome to the Golf Better Podcast. I'm your host, Derek Dominski. The Golf Better Podcast is brought to you by GolfBetterTucson.com. Be sure to check out our website and follow us on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Today we have on one of my favorite coaches, Scott Hamilton. To my knowledge, Scott has the largest stable of tour players of any coach I've seen. We're going to learn some awesome things from Scott, like the three keys to driving it well, a hip and pelvis drill you can train at home, and maybe the most wisdom-filled minute I've ever recorded in a podcast. Enjoy. All right, Scott, welcome to the podcast.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
So go ahead and tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you got into teaching golf.
Well, I was a club professional. I've worked at one club my whole time. I worked in an apprenticeship down in Hilton Head at Harbortown at Hague Point, back in the old school way to go through an apprenticeship. And then I got a head pro job when I was about 27 or 8 in Cartersville, Georgia, a little small town club, a little private non-equity club. And I've literally been here ever since. I'm 55. I turned 55 like a few days back. So it's the only job I've ever had. I was just the typical head pro, old school, owned the shop, ran the tournaments. And, you know, I mean, to supplement my income, I started teaching quite a bit. Really helped pay the invoices, you know, in the winter.
Yeah.
And so about 96, I think in 96, I built my first indoor to hit out bay on the end of the range at Cartersville. And I was probably the first guy, in the area, a long, big area that had that. So I kind of, you know, that really helped me get going with the instruction.
Yeah.
And I just kind of grew that to kind of what I do now, where I'm still affiliated with a club, but really I just teach tour guides and travel all the time now.
Yeah. So who or what has been most influential in your teaching, whether it be technology, TrackMan, BodyTrack, I know you use technology, or just any maybe mentors or anything that you've had?
The thing with me is I was pretty much self-taught. Like, I had a couple guys that – there's a guy in Atlanta, George Kilnhofer, that I got a handful of lessons from. He was a golf machine guy. He kind of taught me about downswing playing.
Yep.
I didn't get a ton of lessons, but, like, he was the first guy that I ever went to that shot a face-on down-the-line video at the same time so you could see what was happening at both angles. So he definitely had a pretty large impact on me. And, as I got – but really, I never worked for anybody. I just kind of worked for myself and gave, you know, like some club pros, I was given 1,500 lessons a year, and I did that for years. So a lot of it self-taught. I really never did much education stuff. It wasn't as available as it is now.
Yeah.
Like, it's these coaching and teaching summits have really come on, where they weren't really that available when I was, and I really didn't have the time to take off because I like to play a little bit too, you know?
Yeah.
But, as the evolution of instruction goes, the first thing I had obviously was video, and, you know, that was a big part in building shape. And then I got, I was like everybody else, I got a vector launch monitor. It didn't work very well. And then I got a flight scope and got rid of it. And then I got a TrackMan. And that was a big leap. You know, whenever you get a TrackMan, you start figuring out about club path and face angle. And then, you know, as I've been more successful, I've been able to buy pretty much everything. Probably in the last 3 years, the biggest piece of technology I own are gears. And the thing about, I have such a huge, I teach so many tour guys, and I'm friends with so many other tour guys, that I've had so many captures on that 3D, and that's probably changed what I do more than anything, and that's been in the last 3 years. But, you know, pretty much I was a pivot and playing kind of instructor, and then kind of made that work with the TrackMan. And now with this 3D stuff, that's obviously, you know, anybody that gets deep into that 3D, just especially with the database that I have, you just kind of see what, you know, all those tour guys, literally, they're all doing the same thing in different amounts, you know.
Yeah. So what would you say gears has maybe taught you the most?
The first thing it taught me was kind of what the pelvis does. Like, the guys do straighten the right leg and the right side of the pelvis goes up, and then they slide over on top of it. And when their lead arm levels, you know, when the pelvis levels out, it's about, most average guys, about left arm parallel in the downswing, and then the pelvis moving back and up out of the ground, and what the spine's doing. And, you know, where you can look at somebody, some, you got a college girl in and she's way right bent hung behind it. You can kind of see that maybe she's spun out too soon or doesn't get her pelvis high enough or what she's doing with her knees. But it's a combination really of what's going on. I tell people all the time, I used to be just really a club face playing kind of guy. And I still do a lot of that, but I've really got way more into what the body's doing, when the knees are firing, you know, when the flexes in the knees are, and how high the pelvis gets, and, you know, what the pivot looks like in relationship to the shot shape that a guy hits, where, you know, guys that hit, you know, cuts are normally have way less right bend and, you know, can even get target side in the backswing and then slide into it, compared to draw by guys normally have more right bend and kind of matching all that up, really, more than anything.
Yeah, you teach a ton of tour players. If anyone follows you on Instagram, you're just seeing great college players, tour players kind of nonstop. What would be some of the best parts of that job that you enjoy, and what would be some of the hardest parts of that job?
You know, the best part is I get to go, I know the best teachers in the world, or some of the best teachers in the world. They all travel on tour, so I'm friends with them, so I have access to asking them questions all the time, which I'm, you know, I mean, you got Dana Dalquist, and you got Tillery, and, you know, VJ Trolio, and, I mean, Sean, and Blackburn, and all those guys. I mean, we're all really good friends. It's not really like you see on Instagram where everybody's hating on each other. Everybody knows how complicated it is. So you have the access to really smart guys that know, you know, and every guy's better at something than somebody else is, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get struggling in an area, you know, and that's some of the best parts about it. And also being around all those great players and, you know, especially the short game stuff, watching Chris Kirk, or, you know, go down the list, you know, anybody, Patrick Reed, anybody, you have access to stand there and watch them work, and, you know, when you have a little bit of free time. And that part's super cool. The, probably the worst part of the whole thing is the travel. You know, it's just I travel about 35 weeks a year on tour, so I'm away from my family all the time.
Yeah. Now, in working with so many tour players and knowing a lot of them, what tends to be the difference, in your opinion, from players who tend to make it on tour and those that don't, if there's anything you can pinpoint?
You know, it's always a crazy question, because I teach plenty of developmental or D1 kids that, you know, you look at and be like, man, this guy's got everything. There's no way he's going to miss. And, you know, a lot of them do, just because it's really hard to get access out there to play.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I'd say the biggest thing, that the guys that figure out that it's just a bunch of misses, and to have a narrow miss and get, like, sounds cliche, but the guys that play, especially when they get going out there, that just play one shot pattern,
yeah,
is a way easier way to play golf than a guy. Like, a lot of college kids show up and they're trying to move it both ways, but their patterns may be fade bias. And they'll get better the minute I'm like, hey, man, you just need to fade this thing and get, you know, I heard Chris Kirk tell a guy one time, they asked him that question. He's like, man, 95% of the guys on the PGA Tour are great at hitting one shot. And that's a lot of what I see, is where people try to make too much out of it. And also how they handle it whenever they don't go and try to rewire the engine every time they have a bad round, you know. They just realize it's going to happen, and they're going to play great certain weeks, and some weeks they're not going to play as well. But it's not like the end of the world when they have a bad tournament.
Yeah, I mean, speaking on that, would you say, you know, let's say it's a par three a lot of times, would you say a lot of the guys, for the most part, are kind of hitting a stock driving range shot, or do you see them – maybe taking some off or finessing some, or does it seem to be just kind of mostly just like a stock shot as much as they can get?
You know, most of my guys normally hit less club than more, just because, you know, I mean, if you hit on a track man and you go, you know, I do this to college kids all the time. They show up and they can hit their 7-iron 100, and I don't know, they all hit them 185 yards now, and you make them stand there and knock the club head speed off that allows them to hit at 180, all of a sudden their dispersion comes way in, you know, when they slow it down. So you know, most of the time guys are hitting kind of one shot shape in there, and they're not maxing out their speed. They're just kind of hitting cruisers in there.
Now, in working with a lot of tour players that come to you, what do you find tend to be maybe some of their inconsistencies, or when someone comes to work with you, what do you tend to find with a player that's struggling on tour? Are there any consistencies in what you see for the most part?
Well, most of the time with me, a lot of times I get guys that are driving it bad, because I'm kind of, that's my specialty, is to get a guy to drive it decently. And, you know, like when I helped Aaron Baddeley, or, you know, Matt Every, when I got helping him again, you know, it's normally a crooked driver that runs you off the PGA Tour faster than anything. Most guys are pretty good iron players and you know, can all putt efficiently. So most of the time when you start helping somebody, a lot of times it's the driver. You know, so that's kind of, you know, when I think about it over the course of time, that's where I've helped a lot of people the most. And then, you know, sometimes it's that they're just too, a lot of times I find myself anymore, guys are just too stuck behind it, not using the ground enough to learn how to shallow out by getting out of the ground, and their angled attacks are off one way or the other, and, you know, their compression's off a little bit, so the shots aren't as solid, they don't have enough club face stability. But those are kind of two of the main things that I normally end up working on, it seems like.
Yeah, and what would be some key components in your mind that would go into great driving? Are there any backswing positions that you favor, or anything that you like to have happen for a player when they swing?
Yeah, see, I think the downswing's all set up on what happens in the backswing, because, you know, the golf swing for a tour guy on an average is like 0.96 of a second. So when they get in transition and shift and change directions, the mass of the club head's kind of going where it's set up to go. So most times what I'm ending up trying to do, and I, you know, I kind of knew this before I even had a TrackMan or anything, but the driver's one of the easiest clubs to hit if you can do three things. If you can stay in posture, if you can swing the club relatively on plane where the club's not way out of position getting to the top or out of the top, and you can return the shaft down at 90 degrees. In other words, drivers and putters are made to come in straight up down with the shaft, not lean forward. Mm-hmm. If you can set a guy up and make those three things happen, they're going to drive it pretty good.
And I know that you're friends with Boo Weekly and help him. I've always been a big fan. How pure is it when you see Boo Weekly just flushing shots in his sound?
He's the best ball striker that I've taught. I mean, I've taught it since 2009 or 10. And, I mean, the guy is so good. It's like, you know, slight adjustments on him. If, you know, if he was a B putter, the guy would have won 20 times probably, you know. I mean, he is – I remember this year, and I think it was in Houston maybe he was playing. I was on the back of the range with him. It was just me and him and his caddy back there. I mean, it was an absolute joke. He hit balls for two bags of balls. I mean, he didn't probably hit two of them semi-offline. That would have been 10 yards offline. I mean, it's just insane how good he hit it, you know.
Yeah, and I know you work with a lot of other great ball strikers. Who are maybe some swings on tour that maybe you don't work with but that you really like?
I mean, there's a lot of golf swings out there. Like, I really like Charlie Hoffman's action. I always say that. Tillery works with Kiz. I like Kiz's action. I think it's really clean and simple. Golly, there's a bunch, man. I mean, I'm always amazed all the new kids that come out, how, you know, there's the Wolf kid that looks a little bit different than everybody else, but I mean, they're pretty textbook anymore. I mean, to me, the golf instruction in the United States has got so good that when I'm on Instagram and I watch these guys, I don't even know. I have appreciation for what they're doing. They look really good, you know, going around them. So, I mean, there's I'm not answering this question very well, but there's honestly more golf swings on tour I like than dislike,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And then is there anything that you maybe used to teach that maybe you don't teach as much anymore, and or things that you focus on more? I know you mentioned with some of the gear.
Yeah, you know, it is interesting how your as you learn more, and I learn a lot more from the good players than I do from other instructors just by watching them on that 3D. But one big thing that I've kind of figured out a bunch is, like, when the right arm – I used to really love when guys lagged it a bunch, and I used to think a bunch of that lag was created by, you know, adding a bunch of right elbow bend on the downswing, but it's really not. Like, if you get a guy – I was actually looking at Boo's 3D capture in there today because I was looking at – I went in today and had a free day and spent about 2 hours in my studio just looking at a bunch of gears captures, just trying to learn stuff. And the thing is that probably the biggest thing of late that I've kind of figured out that, you know, guys that hit it really well, they turn their shoulders over 100 degrees, most of them, but their right elbow bend only goes to about 85 degrees. And then from that point right there, they might add one or two more degrees. Like a guy like Harold Varner, he on three-fourths of his swings, I looked at today, he might have, if he was at 85 of his right arm bend. So if 90 would be straight up and down. So he's not quite, you know, if you held your arm out flat and bent your elbow up, made a 90-degree angle, that'd be 90. So Harold gets an 85 or so, and then he might add, like, it might jump to 88, and then he starts lengthening it out, and he leans the crap out of it, where I used to think guys that leaned it a bunch, you know, buried that right elbow down in there and had that shaft, but that's not really what happens. Like, I mean, when I look at, again and again, at these guys that hit it really well, they have these great big shoulder turns, but their right arm is really wide right there, and then they don't bend it down more. You know, you always hear that thing about, like, bump your right elbow down into your side, you know, it's really opposite of what these guys do. These guys are lengthening that thing out on the downswing.
And then a couple more questions if you've got some time here.
Yeah, I got plenty of time.
Yeah, great. I appreciate it, Scott. You're killing it. So if the average weekend golfer had only 1 hour to devote to practice per week, are there any recommendations that you would give them in maybe what to practice or anything like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I would 100%. I would practice like straighten my right knee, bend my left, and then slide my pelvis forward. And then there's a point in the downswing, I kind of call it a crossover. Most guys, it's about when the shaft's parallel to the ground, that the left knee, I know we're talking about a right-handed golfer here, where the left knee get straighter than the right knee, if that makes sense. So I would stand around and practice. And I think I put a couple Instagram posts up where I hold the club in front of it and try to make your pelvis work kind of in a U shape. And then get that where that left knee gets straighter than the right knee, about shaft parallel in the downswing, and feel what that feels like to work your pelvis like that, where the right side goes up, you level out, and then the left side goes back up. I don't know if I've described that very well, but if you that, you get somebody on a pressure mat and they're all screwed up and it looks wacko, and you go give them that drill, they'll start sending that pressure back to the right and then back to the left, you know. And to me, it's, you know, when you watch the hacker out on the range, they're just stuck or falling backwards or spinning around the circle incorrectly, you know.
Now, have you ever helped or played golf with legend Jeff Knox?
Oh yeah, Knox. He stayed at my house whenever Cartersville Country Club. I think it was 3 years ago. He and his son Lee stayed at my house when they played in that was the GSGA Mid Amateur, and I played golf at Augusta with him, and then I played in the Bulldog Open with him 3 years ago. So. Yeah, I know Knox real well. Great guy.
How good is he at golf?
He's really good, man. He's really good. He's just got a pretty textbook golf swing. And, I mean, golly, he plays good under that pressure over there when he's been the marker. That's what's so impressive. I played Augusta quite a few times. I mean, that bad boy is hard, man. He obviously has some course knowledge, but I mean, he's a solid human being, that guy is for sure.
Well, Scott, I can't thank you enough for your time. If people want to contact you or follow you, what's the best way to do that?
The best way is I really put all my stuff on Instagram at Scott Hamilton Golf. It's at Scott Hamilton Golf on Instagram. And you know, if people DM me, I try to answer the questions I can. Some of them I don't even understand, but like it's actually, I was looking at Instagram about a post right before you got here where they were talking about pelvic tilt. So I was kind of reading that, see what everybody said. It's always interesting.
Well, Scott, thank you so much for your time. Have a great night, my friend.
Thank you.
Thanks so much again to Scott for joining us on the podcast. This is one that I would listen to twice. Go back and be sure to listen around the 8-minute mark in what Scott has to say about misses, being great at one shot, and not necessarily rebuilding the engine when bad rounds happen. I appreciate so much your support of the podcast. Be sure to leave a review on your platform of choice and share with all of your golfing companions. Until next time.